we can turn it around. We can turn it around if we get more leaders like Alec Lors, who's all of 17 and has been at this for at least 5 years, the activism of climate change. We are going to have him on the show in just a moment. I just want to give you a little bit of background in case you've not heard of him. He is an inspiration. He is a tour de force. If you've heard him speak, he's getting ever more confident. I remember from 5 years ago he was kind of soft-spoken. He is tall. He is lanky. He is loud. He is strong. He is courageous. And he is the founder of Kids Versus Global Warming. He is also at the center of legal action, trying to get our government to do what they should be doing and should have been doing long, long, long ago. He's taking time out from his studies and his internship to join me on the Green Front. So without further delay, Alec Lors, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me back.
Tell us what has happened with your lawsuit, which was filed some time ago. I was proud to be on hand when you launched the I Matter movement. The I Matter March was held last Mother's Day in San Francisco in Civic Center. I was there and was so proud of you and your fellow youth, inconvenient youth, for what you're doing, trying to hold our government and leaders accountable. What has happened in the intervening year, and then how did it culminate last week?
Yeah, so it's been an exciting year since then. I mean, this whole thing kind of started when I had just been doing this work for a few years and traveling all over and speaking to people and calling for, like, changes in our own lives and calling to march in the streets. And I began to just sort of feel uneasy, like we need something big, something that will actually change the system at its very core or whatever. And I began to just sort of think abstractly about, like, maybe the judicial system is something we can try. Maybe it's not as bought out by the fossil fuel corporations. And around the time I was thinking about that, I was connected with this group of attorneys who have been developing this legal approach called atmospheric trust litigation, which basically says that our government has a legal responsibility to protect the atmosphere for future generations. And I decided I wanted to be the lead plaintiff for the federal case, and my organization, iMatter, we committed to gathering youth plaintiffs all over the country, and we really launched it as a movement. And it's really been an exciting year. The case was filed last May 4th, which was 4 days before our I Matter March. And it's been an exciting year for that. In November we filed a preliminary injunction, which basically says that we are in imminent danger, and we call for immediate, basically just like for the process to be quicker, because we actually are in immediate danger because of climate change. We're reaching these tipping points with the consequences of these natural systems that are becoming out of balance, which is basically the core of what climate change is. And the big news this month and last month has been early April, the National Association of Manufacturers, which is one of the largest industry lobbying groups in the country, along with these five other huge fossil fuel and industry lobbying groups, intervened in the case to fight us, basically saying that they have the right to emit as much carbon as they want, and then they've never been required to reduce emissions, so what say do we have, kind of thing. And we're saying that, no, that's not only morally wrong, it's actually illegal under the public trust doctrine and commons law, which is what this legal approach is based off of, which are super old laws and are actually fundamental to the U.S. Constitution in a lot of ways. So these interveners last month filed a motion to dismiss our case, and the hearing for that was last Friday. So our big focus has been leading up to that, and it was an amazing, it was fascinating in so many ways, and also leading up to the hearing last week, I and a delegation of seven youth leaders who are plaintiffs in cases around the country, we met with congressmen, and we had a meeting at the White House actually, and it was just kind of an amazing just moment of youth standing up. And it wasn't just meet and greets either. I mean, we met with over 15 congressmen, which is kind of incredible that we were able to, we had to split up because there were too many meetings set up. And they all gave us at least like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half hour, and actually listened to what we had to say. And we actually got a commitment from the Congressional Progressive Caucus. There were four members that we met with who represented the entire 78 members in their caucus, and they endorsed a statement issuing their support for this movement and saying that they stand with the youngest generation and not with the fossil fuel companies who are just fighting for profits. So that was amazing. And really, we last week we met with all three branches of government, which I think is really cool. So anyway, yeah, that's sort of a nutshell of how the last year has gone.
Fabulous. So inspiring, so impressive. I should mention here that you are being represented, you youth, pro bono by one of the Bay Area's best legislators, and that's the former U.S. Congressman Paul Pete McCloskey. He's doing it on a pro bono basis. He, of course, is a co-founder of Earth Day, and he's the one who filed the suit, or his office did. That's I think, significant, even though he has always been an environmental leader. He is a Republican. What is your sense of how the planet and climate change and our environment, the one you're inheriting, has become so politicized that you can see, you know, along party lines what's happening and how, let's say it like it is. You know, the Republicans, Libertarians, Conservatives are doing nothing less than really harming, if not damning, your future and, you know, generations to come behind you.
Yeah, well, it's really, I just kind of find it sad that it's become so just caught up in all this politics and financial and taxes and all this just kind of crazy nonsense, when really it's an issue that concerns the children and grandchildren of everyone, of every, you know, congressman and senator and business leader and CEO and person on this planet. And I mean, it seems like something I've found, I mean, I've spoken to thousands and thousands of young people, and I've seen wherever I go that we have this subconscious sense of calling about this issue and about a lot of world issues. We can feel that there's something off, there's something going wrong, and all it takes is just kind of a little spark of inspiration, and we're off, we can do anything.
And the spark of inspiration, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say the spark of inspiration for you is watching An Inconvenient Truth, and I understand that Julia Olson, the attorney and founder of a group called Our Children's Trust, was also inspired and catalyzed by Al Gore's epic film. Tell us about Children's Trust and their role in all this.
Yeah, well, Our Children's Trust is actually the organization that a lot of these attorneys who are working with are a part of, and it was formed basically to as kind of an organizational vehicle for this case. And Julie Olson is the first attorney who I talked to, and she's actually the main, or one of the two main attorneys who actually have been working this case and who were there representing us on Friday at the hearing. And she's really been an amazing ally throughout this journey. I really feel fortunate to have these awesome lawyers, because I think even the fact that we've gotten this far is just kind of it's a testament to how powerful this case is, and how actually, like, legally strong our arguments are. And at the hearing, it sort of got bogged down into, like, the specifics of the public trust doctrine, and, like, whether it applies to the federal and whether it's actually expressly in the Constitution, and it just kind of got into all that sort of craziness. But I was just so impressed by our attorneys who were representing us. They were just handled the situation really well. And it was interesting, the government attorneys and the interveners and all the people kind of on the other side or whatever didn't argue the science at all. I mean, there was never any mention of climate change isn't real, or never any, like, you're just trying to raise taxes or any of that. It was the government attorney actually said at the beginning, he was the first one to talk in the hearing, he said that we're not here to talk about the science. We, the U.S. government, agree that climate change is a problem, and we're committed to doing what we can to reduce carbon emissions. So, like, that just shows that. I mean, if anything, I see that as a victory. No matter what the outcome of this hearing is, I just feel really, really hopeful and excited that we've gotten to this place where it's basically accepted on both sides that this is an issue. And they then, of course, went into, you know, here's why this should be dismissed, and here's why all this sort of stuff. But I think just the fact that we've gotten this far just shows the power of kind of the youngest generation. And that's one of the things that I've really found speaking to so many young people is we can be a unique source of moral authority on this issue. Like, we have the authority and the power to kind of push past and break through these kind of political and financial and whatever, just kind of blockades that we've sort of gotten stuck into as a movement and as a society. And we can get to what this is really about, which is our survival.
Well, there's three entities that are tough to ignore. Demographically, youth, what you represent, moms, what I represent, and then there's Dr. James Hansen, the NASA Goddard Space Institute scientist, one of the top climate scientists in the country, if not the world, and he is hard to ignore because when he gets arrested outside the White House at the Keystone Pipeline protest, you know, people who are not paying attention otherwise to what a friend of mine ignorantly called the Tarzan protest. What's the Tarzan protest? They see a NASA scientist getting handcuffed, and they cannot just dismiss him as another tree-hugging, Birkenstock-wearing, you know, eco-activist.
Yeah, that's been the most. I mean, Dr. Hansen is actually our main scientific advisor for this case, and what we're asking for is a climate reduction plan based on his research, and along with a team of the world's top climate scientists that he's put together to support this case. And he's been always a huge supporter, or just a huge ally and hero and inspiration of mine. And I feel kind of really lucky to be able to work with him. But like, the fact that he's out there getting arrested, I mean, like, scientists don't do that. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize it, but that's like not something that normally happens. Usually, scientists are usually uneasy about mentioning anything related to an opinion or like communicating, or they just kind of do their research and then keep to themselves. And I think that's the main reason why there's so much misinformation out there, is because scientists are just like, okay, here's the research, here's what's happening. But then there's stories like Dr. James Hansen, and there's other stories beginning to really get attention like his, where he's actually standing up and taking a stand on this issue and trying to let people know that this is actually a serious problem. And if the scientists are doing that and getting involved, I think that's a sign that we should take this seriously and possibly worry.
So, you know, polls show that Americans, adults in general, are putting climate change still, you know, pretty much near the bottom of the list of their concerns. And yet, it's not the same for young people. You guys have enough to worry about just in terms of the economy and what kind of job market you're going to face when you graduate from college. But I understand that you also lose sleep, you and your fellow youth, on, you know, what kind of environment, climate, something we took for granted growing up, you're going to be inheriting.
Yeah, well, we can feel it firsthand. I mean, it's among kind of the general like adult population or whatever. It's climate change and these environmental issues and whatever are just still just really abstract and distant and scientific and just like lines on a graph rather than actual, you know, real deep feelings or whatever. But I've just found that my generation, we can feel it. I mean, it's our future that we're fighting for. We're going to have to grow up and deal with the consequences of whatever decisions we as a society make today. So we can feel that. We know that. It's our survival that's at stake. And that's just, I've found that wherever I talk, it's just all it takes is just, like I said, just something to spark it. For me, it was an inconvenient truth. For youth I've talked to, it's whether it's like having the opportunity to travel to Africa and see the, you know, the poverty and devastation that's happening because of extreme droughts that are related to climate change, or whether it's growing up in Colorado and seeing the forest, millions of acres of forest killed by pine beetles because it doesn't get cold enough in the winters anymore, or whether it's, you know, seeing on TV that people are denying these issues and being and so upset about that that you decide to do the research for yourself and realize how big of an issue it is. All it takes is just one sort of moment of awakening, and we're off. I mean, we can't be extinguished.
I love it. I have to say, we'll let you go in a minute. I know you've got to get back to your studies. But an interesting fact that I saw in one of the articles about your action is that you, quote, suffer from ADHD. I say it's a gift if this is what it manifests itself into, this kind of activism. You say that it's actually the adults that seem to be a little bit distracted, grown-ups who are so busy doing everything in the world, in many cases for their kids, best education, best health care, driving them here and there in the giant SUVs. They're too busy to really tune into what's happening with the environment that they're leaving behind.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that's just kind of I've sort of used my experience just throughout, just struggling to concentrate and get distracted and all that, just kind of as an analogy for where we are as a society. I mean, like, the main thing with ADHD is just that, like, you become kind of really impulsive when you're in unhealthy places and just kind of make decisions just based on what the short-term benefit of that will be. Like, oh, it would be fun to play video games. I don't feel like writing an article five times in a row and then editing it for 3 days. I'm just going to, you know, just watch a TV show kind of thing. But that's kind of what's exactly what's happening in our society. We're choosing to value these short-term kind of interests like convenience and profits and power and just like what's easiest at the time, more than like the actual long term, you know, what really matters, the survival of our generation. And I love just kind of being able to use my own experience kind of as an analogy for that, because I'm, along with sort of calling for these changes and stuff, I'm going through this own sort of process just on my own. And I've been, I mean, both because I'm turning 18 and going through natural transition points, and because I'm realizing a lot of like deeper things about my message and stuff, I've been in a kind of an intense period of transition kind of with my message and with my life, and I'm realizing it really does go deeper than just specifically climate change. It's really just how we as a society, we just like, we have this mindset, this way of thinking that values, you know, money and power more than anything else, and views the world as just kind of, or nature just as a resource to conquer, something that belongs to us. And I don't know, if we want to solve climate change, I believe that's what we need to change. And that's I think the next role in my journey. And it's going along with my own personal transition, dealing with these kind of issues that I've had, you know, concentrating and being productive and all that. It's totally, completely in line with the shift that we as a society have to go through and are already going through. Because I really feel like this is it. I mean, like, this year even, we're either going to begin to change, something's going to push through, and we'll begin to enter into this new way of thinking, this new way of living, this new way of looking at the world, or it's going to crash, and we're going to actually begin to feel it at a personal level, and we're going to actually begin to suffer, and then it'll become real to us, and by that point, it'll be too late. So this is really such an important time in history, and I really just feel honored to be alive and be a part of this movement in this important time.
And Alec Lorz, I am so glad that you are hyper-focused on climate change. And as Al Gore said, the original inspiration for your activism in An Inconvenient Truth, as he said, we're on a collision course with ourselves or something close to that. And I agree with you completely. It feels like things are heating up, not only climate-wise, meteorologically, but something has to give. The temperature records are broken. The, you know, extreme weather events are, you know, breaking records. And politically, things could not be more absurd. They'd be funny, as I often say, if they weren't so serious and the consequences weren't so serious, especially on your generations. And as we parents must do, speaking for your generation, you must speak for generations to follow. Last time I checked, there was no memo saying we're going to, you know, close down shop in, you know, 30 years. Yeah. So we must start thinking, you know, not only seven generations ahead, which we should, but even, you know, two generations ahead. So thank you for what you're doing to make that point and for really rallying focus and attention on this most urgent of issues. I promised I'd let you get back to what you're doing, and we want you to continue to do everything you are doing on the front that is so important, and that is making those who should know better with a trans-political, trans-partisan approach, you know, what is, you know, needing to be attended to. So thank you again for all your great work, and hope to have you back on the show again, and appreciate your taking time for the Green Front.
Great. Thank you so much. Let's make it happen.
Terrific. And as I mentioned, I met Alec at a Mother's Day rally in San Francisco a year ago, and because of the action that they took last week, as well as what we covered in our first segment, news that the Deniosaurs have funded all kinds of supposed think tanks to destroy President Obama by destroying his support for renewable energy, declaring nothing less than the war on wind. That all got me to sit down at my computer and write a Mother's Day essay. So I want to tell my listeners who may not be aware of that, that they can go to my website, thegreenfront.com, or check it out on the Huffington Post. Very pleased to have become a writer for the blogger, I guess is the term, for the Huffington Post. My first piece was The Eco Evolution Will Not Be Televised, which is my other favorite topic. And that's how media, still mainstream media, missing the biggest story of our time. That was a bit of a rite of passage, W-R-I-T-E, getting on the Huffington Post. Really love expressing myself that way. So many people are blogging for them. I urge you to check it out if you somehow are one of the few who don't read it every day. Certainly Huffington Post Green Page has so many stories of interest. And it was really fun to actually write that piece, see it up. And if not on Mother's Day, when should we all be tuning into Mother Earth? And also, I issued a challenge. I said, you know, all you busy mothers out there, and I'm one of them, but what are you so busy doing that you cannot, you know, come to a green tea party and learn about, you know, how to green your routine, or, you know, read a story, if not a book, on what's going on with our environment? That's something that each of us can do, all of us should do. You know, wouldn't it be a shame if we destroyed the planet because we were all, you know, too busy multitasking, doing Lord knows what? We really have to have that long-term view. And I'm so glad that there's so much to talk about on this front, because we have challenges that are overwhelming, that can be paralyzing, but we also have an opportunity here to really turn this around. If we all start paying attention and tune into our environment, if we don't, if we stay asleep or get paralyzed or feel like it's just too daunting, we will be damning.